Chapter 3. In the ruins of their enemy, the Death Guard task force regrouped and surveyed the breadth of the destruction they had wrought. The wreckage of the Yorghali picket fleet was a cloud of crystallized breathing gases, hull fragments, and the dead. Some of the teardrop-shaped Xenos vessels were still relatively intact. One by one, these were being scuttled with atomic charges, reduced to sun-hot balls of radioactive plasma. In less than a standard Terran day, there would be nothing recognizable left to show the face of an enemy that the Death Guard had obliterated so utterly. Out there, in the shoal of destruction, stormbirds on funerary details scoured the engagement area for Astartes who had been blown into the dark during boarding operations. Those found would be interred as heroes, once the progenoid glands in their corpses had been harvested. The precious flesh matter from the dead would serve the Legion in their stead, passing on to strengthen new initiates when the next round of recruitment began. Once in a while, a lucky find would bring the recovery crew's alive battle brother, dormant inside his armour beneath the lulling pressure of his Sus-An membranes. But that happened very rarely. Beyond the zone where the Death Guard fleet gathered like carrion birds around a corpse, the Yorghal bottle was executing a slow, wounded turn to sight down into the ecliptic plane of the Iota Horologi system. Drifts of wreckage and broken panels from the construct's vast solar panels floated behind it in a faint, cometary tail. The main drives blinked out of sequence as the fusion motors worked the colossal mass of the world ship about. Dissenting voices from the Mechanicum contingent aboard the warship, Spectre of Death, had petitioned Mortarion for a few days in which to loot the alien craft of technology. The Primarch, as was his prerogative, refused the request. The letter of Lord Malkador's orders, and therefore by extension those of the Emperor himself, was that the Yorghal incursion into the sector was to be exterminated. The Master of the Death Guard clearly saw no point of confusion in those orders. There was to be nothing left of the aliens. And yet, Nathaniel Garrow watched the play and turn of the fleet from the gallery above the Endurance's main launch bay. Above him, a span of thick armoured glass and space beyond it. Below, through skeletal brass frames and grid-cut decking, the expanse of the flight platform. Gradually, his gaze dropped. Down among the sleek stormbirds and heavy thunderhawks was a single swan-like shuttlecraft, the spread wings of the ship detailed in gold and black. It stood out among the white and grey Astartes craft, a single bright game fowl nestled in a flock of pale raptors. Aboard that vessel, a sole tangible remnant of the assault would remain after all the works of the Yorghal were erased from this sector of space. He found himself wondering what other orders the Sisters of Silence had, orders that were unbound, even in the face of a Primarch's countermand. It was not defiance on their part to go against Mortarion's wishes if it was the Emperor's will to do otherwise, surely. This was not disobedience. This was a trivial issue, a small thing of little consequence. Garrow had never known of and could barely envisage an instance when the commands of Primarch and Emperor would not be in harmony. An oiled hiss signalled the opening of the gallery's hatch, and Garrow looked to see who had come to interrupt his customary moment of solitude after the battle. A small smile curled at his lips as two figures entered the echoing empty colonnade. He gave a shallow bow as Amandira Kendall approached him, a younger woman in a less ornate version of a witch-seeker's robes walking at her heels. Kendall looked to Garrow as he assumed he must have looked to her, fresh from the battlefield, fatigued but content that the fight had gone well.
"Her sister," said Garrow. "I trust the outcome this day was satisfactory to you."
The woman signed a few words and the girl at her side spoke.
"Battle Captain Garrow, well met.
The goals of the Imperium have been ably served.
Nathaniel raised an eyebrow and looked directly at the girl. He saw her more clearly now, noting that she had no armour or visible weapons, as Kendall did.
Forgive me, but it was my understanding that the Sisters of Silence are never to speak.
The girl nodded, her manner changing slightly as she answered.
That is indeed so, Lord. No sister may utter a word unto death once she gives the oath of tranquillity. I am a novice, Captain. I have yet to take the vow, and so I may speak to you. Sisters in waiting, such as I, serve our order when communication is needed with outsiders.
Indeed,
Garrow nodded.
Then may I ask your mistress what she wishes of me?
Kendall gestured again, and the novice translated, her voice taking on a formal tone once more.
I wish to speak with you before we departed the Endurance on the matters to which you and your men were party aboard the Yorgul Cylinder. It is the Emperor's wish that they not be spoken of.
The captain absorbed this. Of course, why else had Kendall killed the alien Psyker with a shot to the chest instead of a round through the skull? To preserve whatever secrets it held inside that misshapen head. He nodded to himself. The Lord of Man's great works into the understanding of the ethereal realms were beyond his grasp as a mere captain, and if the Emperor required the corpse of a dead Xenos mutant to further that understanding, then Nathaniel Garrow had no place to contradict it.
I shall make it so. The Emperor has his tasks, and we have ours. My men would never question that.
The Silent Sister came a little closer and watched him carefully. She signed something to the novice, and the girl hesitated, questioning her mistress in return before relaying the words.
Sister Amandira asks, she wishes to know if the child spoke to you.
It had no mouth.
Garrow answered, quicker than he intended to. Kendall placed a finger on her lips and shook her head. Then she moved the finger to her temple. Nathaniel looked at his hands. There were still flecks of alien blood on them.
I am clean of any taint, he insisted. The thing did not contaminate me.
Did it speak to you? Repeated the novice.
The moment became long before he spoke.
It knew what I was. It said it could see tomorrow. It told me all I worship would die.
Garrow sneered.
But I am an Astartes. I worship nothing. I honour no false god, only the reality of imperial truth.
His answer seemed to appease Sister Amandira, and she inclined her head in a bow.
Your fealty, like that of all Death Guard, has never been in doubt, Captain. Thank you for your honesty, relayed the novice. It is clear the creature was attempting to cloud your intention. You did well to resist it.
The Oblivion Knight made the sign of the Aquila and bowed. The girl mirrored Kendall's gesture.
My mistress wishes you and your company to accept the commendation and gratitude of the Sisters of Silence. Your names will be presented to the Sigilite in recognition of your service to Terra.
You honour us, Garrow replied. If I might ask, what was the fate of your comrade, the Null Maiden who was unhooded in the fighting?
The novice nodded.
Ah, Sister Thessaly, yes. Her injuries were serious, but she will recover. Our Medicae aboard the Aerea Gloris will heal her in due course. I understand your brother Voyen saved her life.
Aerea Gloris, repeated Garrow. I do not know of that vessel. Is it part of our flotilla?
A smile crossed Kendall's lips, and she signed to the novice.
No, Captain. It is part of mine. See for yourself.
The woman pointed out through the glass dome, and Garrow followed her direction. A piece of the void moved slowly across the prow of Endurance, passing between the bow of the warship and the distant glow of the Iotan sun. Whereas conventional vessels of the Imperial fleets ran with pennants and signal lamps to illuminate the lengths of their hulls, This new arrival, this Aerea Gloris, came in darkness, arriving out of the interstellar deeps as an ocean predator might slip to the surface of a nighttime sea. Garrow had never laid eyes on a black ship before. These were the mothercraft of the Silent Sisterhood, carrying them back and forth across the galactic disk on the Emperor's witch-hunting missions. It was hard to make out anything more than the most basic details of the ship's design. Framed against the solar glow of Iota Horologi, the battlecruiser was at least a match in size for the Death Guard capital ship Indomitable Will. It lacked the traditional plough-blade prow of most Imperial vessels, ending instead in a blunt bow. A single knife-edged sail hung below the stern, and on it was an aquila cut from shimmering volcanic glass. Where Endurance and the ships of the Astartes flotilla were swords against the enemies of Terra, Aerea Gloris was a hammer of witches.
"Impressive," rumbled Garrow.
There was little else he could say. He found himself wondering what it would be like to wander the decks of the vessel, at once attracted and repelled by the idea of what secrets the craft must hide. Sister Amandira bowed again and nodded to her novice.
"We take our leave of you, honoured captain," said the girl. "We are to make space for Luna by day's end, and the warp grows turbulent."
"Safe journey, sisters," he offered, unable to tear his gaze from the dark starship.
Caleb guided the cart across the length of the armory chamber, taking care to stay to the outer walkway around the edges of the long hall. His master's bolter lay across the trolley, the weapon's usually flawless finish marred by lines of damage from the engagement on the Yorgul worldship. As Garrow's housecarl, it was Caleb's duty to see the gun to the arming servitors and ensure that the weapon was returned to its full glory as quickly as possible. He intended not to disappoint his captain. He passed knots of Death Guard as they debriefed and disarmed, men from Temeter's company in animated conversation about a thorny moment during the boarding of a Xenos destroyer, and Astartes of Typhon's first in bellicose humour. Across the chamber, he spied Haker talking with Decius, as the younger man relayed a moment from the battle with an enthusiasm that the dour veteran clearly did not share. The men of the 14th Legion were not given to raucous celebration in their victories. Such displays, Caleb had heard it said, were more in the character of the Space Wolves or the World Eaters. But they did, in their own fashion, salute their successes and give honour to those who fell along the way. The Death Guard cultivated an image that other legions were only too quick to accept, that they were brutal, ruthless, and hard-hearted. But the reality had more shades to it than that. That these Astartes rarely made sport of their warfare was true, but they were not so bleak and stern as some would have believed. Compared to the stories Caleb had heard of stoic and dispassionate legions like the Ultramarines or the Imperial Fists, the Death Guard could almost be considered willful and disorderly. Rounding a stanchion, the housecarl's train of thought stalled at the sound of harsh laughter from a figure before him. He hesitated. Commander Grulgor stood in his path, speaking in muted, amused tones to an Astartes from his second company. The two men clasped gauntlets in a firm, serious handshake, and in spite of the dimness of the ill-lit walkway, Caleb was still able to make out the shape of a disc-shaped brass token held in Grulgor's fingers before he passed it into the other man's grip. He understood immediately that he had intruded on a private moment, something only Astartes should share, something that a mere serf like him was not to be privy to. But there was nowhere Caleb could hide, and if he turned around, the clatter of the cart's wheels would reveal him. In spite of himself, he coughed. It was a very small sound, but it brought with it a sudden silence as the commander broke off and noticed the housecarl for the first time. Caleb was looking directly at the decking and did not see the expression of complete contempt Grulgor turned upon him.
"Garrow's little helot," said the commander. Are you listening where you should not?
He took a step towards the housecarl, and against his will Caleb shrank back. Grulgor's voice took on the tone of a teacher lecturing a student, making a lesson of him.
Do you know what this is, Brother Mokir?
The other Astartes examined Caleb coldly.
It's not a servitor, Commander. Not enough steel and pistons for that. It resembles a man.
Grulgor shook his head.
No, not a man, but a house carl.
The emphasis he put on the title was scornful.
A sad bit of trivia. A dusty practice from the ancient days.
The commander spread his hands.
Look on, Mokir. Look at a failure.
Caleb found his voice.
Lord, if it pleases you, I have duties to perform.
He was ignored.
Before our Primarch brought new, strong blood to our legion, there were many rituals and habits that knotted around the Astartes. Most have been cut away.
Grulgor's face soured.
Some still remain, thanks to the dogged adherence of men who should know better.
Mokir nodded.
Captain Garrow.
Yes, Garrow.
Grulgor was dismissive.
He allows sentiment to cloud his judgment. Oh, he's a fine warrior, I will give him that, but our brother Nathaniel is old in his ways. Too bound by his Terran roots.
The Astartes leaned closer to Caleb, his voice dropping.
Or am I incorrect in my judgment? Perhaps Garrow keeps you around him, not out of some misplaced sense of tradition, but as a reminder, a living example of what it means to fail the Legion.
Please,
said the serf, his knuckles white around the handles of the cart.
I do not understand,
said Mokir, genuinely confounded.
How is this helot a failure?
Ha!
Grulgor said, looking away.
But for a turn of fate, this wastrel might have walked among the Legiones Astartes. He could have stood where you do now, brother, wearing the white, bearing arms for the Imperium. Our friend here was once an aspirant to the 14th Legion, as were we all. Only he fell short of greatness during the trials of acceptance, damned by his own weakness.
The commander tapped his chin thoughtfully.
Tell me, serf, where did your will break? Crossing the Black Plains? Was it in the Tunnel of the Venoms?
Caleb's voice was a whisper.
The Thorn Garden, Lord.
The hateful old memory emerged, fresh and undimmed despite the span of years since the event. The housecarl winced as he recalled the stabbing, poisonous barbs on his bare skin, his blood running in streaks all across his body. He remembered the pain, and worse, the shame, as his legs turned to water beneath him. He remembered falling into the thick, drab mud, lying there, weeping, knowing that he had lost forever the chance to become a Death Guard.
The Thorn Garden, of course.
Grulgor tapped his fingers on his vambrace.
So many have bled out their last in that ordeal. You did well to survive that far.
Mokir raised an eyebrow.
Sir, do you mean to say that this man was an aspirant? But those who fail the trials perish.
Most do, corrected the commander. Most of them die of the wounds they suffer or the poisons they cannot resist during the 7 days of trial. But there are some few who fail but live on still, and even they will largely choose the Emperor's peace over a return in dishonor to their clans.
He gave Caleb a cool stare.
But not all. Some lack the strength of will even for that honor.
Grulgor looked back at Mokir and sniffed archly.
Some legions make use of their throwbacks, but it is not the Death Guard way. Still, Garrow chose to invoke an aged rite to save this wretch from the pit of his own inadequacy. He rescued him.
Grogor snorted.
How noble!
Caleb found a spark of defiance.
It is my privilege to serve, he said.
Is it? Growled the Astartes. You dare to parade your own deficiencies around us, the chosen men of Mortarion. You are an insult. You ape us, hang upon the tails of our cloaks while we fight for the future of our species, polishing guns and pretending you are worthy to be in our company.
He pressed Caleb's cart towards the wall.
You skulk in the shadows. You are Garrow's petty spy. You are nothing!
Grolgor's annoyance flared in his eyes.
If I were captain of the first, the pointless ritual that granted your existence would be ended in a second.
So then, said another voice,
is the commander of the second dissatisfied with his honoured role?
Apothecary Voyen.
Grolgor greeted the new arrival with a wary nod.
Sadly, there are many things that I find myself dissatisfied with.
He stepped away from the trembling housecarl.
Life is always a challenge in that regard, Voyen said with forced lightness, throwing Caleb a sideways look.
Indeed, said the commander. Is there something you wanted, brother?
Only an explanation as to why you saw fit to waylay my captain's equerry during the course of his duties. The battle captain will be returning shortly, and he will wish to know why his orders have not been carried out.
Caleb clearly saw a nerve twitch in Grolgor's jaw in reaction to the temerity of Voyen's reply, and for a moment he expected the senior Astartes to bark out an angry retort to the junior apothecary. But then the instant was gone, as some moment of understanding he was not a party to passed between them. With exaggerated care, Grolgor stepped out of Caleb's path.
The helot may go about his business, he said.
And with that, the commander dismissed them both and strode away with Mokir at his side. Caleb watched them go, and once again saw the glitter of the strange brass token as the Astartes tucked the coin-like object into an ammunition pouch on his belt. He sucked in a shaky breath and bowed to Voyen.
Thank you, Lord. I must confess I do not understand why the commander detests me so.
Voyen walked with him as the housecarl continued on his way.
Ignatius Grolgor hates everything with equal measure, Caleb. You shouldn't take it personally.
And yet, the things he says, sometimes those thoughts are mine as well.
Really? Answer me this, then. Do you think that Captain Garrow, the leader of the Seventh Great Company, considers you an insult? Would a man of honour like him even contemplate such a thing?
Caleb shook his head. Voyen placed his huge hand on the housecarl's shoulder.
You will never be one of us, that is true. But you still serve the Legion despite that. But Grolgor was right, Caleb mumbled. At times I am a spy. I go about the ship, invisible in plain sight, and I see and hear. I keep my Lord Captain conversant with the mood of the Legion.
The apothecary's expression remained neutral.
A good commander should always be well informed. This is not plotting and scheming of which we speak. It is merely the report of talk and temper. You should feel no conflict in this.
They arrived at the Arsenal dais, where the armament servitors were waiting, and the housecarl presented them with the captain's bolter. Caleb felt a churn of tension coming loose inside him, the need to speak pressing on his lips. Voyen seemed to sense it too, and guided him to an isolated corner near a viewport.
It is more than that. I have seen things.
Caleb's words were hushed and secretive.
Sometimes, in quarters of the ships, where the crewmen do not often venture. Hooded gatherings, Lord. Clandestine meetings of what can only be your battle brothers.
Voyen was very still.
You speak of the lodges, yes?
Caleb was taken aback to hear the apothecary talk openly to him of such things. The quiet orders of men inside the Legiones Astartes were not something that was common knowledge to the outside world, and certainly they were things that a man such as Caleb should not have been aware of.
I have heard that name whispered.
The housecarl rubbed his hands together. The palms were sweaty. Something in the back of his mind urged him to say no more, but he couldn't help himself. He wanted to get the words out, to be free of them.
Just now, I saw the commander give a medallion to Brother Mokir. I have seen one before among the personal effects of the late Sergeant Rafim, after his death at the Carinia Moons.
Caleb licked his lips.
A brass disc embossed with the skull and star of our Legion Lord.
And what do you think it is?
A badge, sir? A token of membership for these surreptitious groupings?
The Astartes gave him a level, unmoving stare.
You are afraid that these meetings might threaten the Death Guard's unity, is that it? That sedition may be at their core?
How could they not?
Hissed Caleb.
Secrecy is the enemy of truth. Truth is what the Emperor and his warriors stand for. If men must gather in shadows...
He broke off, blinking. Voyen managed a small smile.
Caleb, you respect Captain Garrow. We all comprehend the might of our Primarch. Do you think such great men would stand idly by and let subversion take root in their midst?
The apothecary put his hand on the housecarl's shoulder again, and Caleb felt the smallest amount of pressure there. He became aware of the mass and strength of the warrior's ceramite glove, enveloping his flesh and bone.
What you have seen in sideways glances and overheard rumours is nothing that should concern you, and it is certainly not a matter with which to distract the battle captain. Trust me when I tell you this.
But...
Caleb said, his throat becoming dry.
But how can you know that?
The smile faded from Voyen's lips.
I can't say.
In his informal robes, Nathaniel Garrow still cut an impressive figure, even among his own men who had yet to divest themselves of their battle armour. At the far end of the wide armoury chamber, in the section of the long iron hall that was the province of the Seventh Company, he moved through the Astartes and spoke with each one, sharing a nod or a grin with those in good humour, sparing a solemn commiseration for those who had lost a close comrade in the engagement with the Yorgul. He singled out Decius for mild chastisement, where the younger Astartes sat at work on his power fist, cleaning the oversized gauntlet with a thick cloth.
Our tactical approach at the Bottle World was not meant to be one of close combat, Solon, he noted. You carry a bolter for good reason.
If it pleases my captain, I have heard this lecture already today from Brother Sendek. He informed me at great length and in intricate detail of exactly how I had failed to adhere to the rules of engagement.
I see.
Garrow took a seat on the bench next to Decius.
And what was your response?
The young warrior smiled.
I told him that we were both still alive, rules or no, and that victory is the only true measure of success.
Indeed.
Of course.
Decius worked at the power fist with great care.
What matters in war, above all other things, is the final result. If there is no victory...
He broke off, finding his words.
Then there is no point.
From nearby, Andus Haker rubbed a hand over his stubbly grey chin.
Such tactical genius from the mouth of a whelp. I fear I may become giddy with surprise.
Decius's eyes flashed at the old veteran's jibe, but Garrow caught the moment and laughed softly, diffusing it.
You must forgive Andus Solon. At his age, his sharp tongue is the only blade he can wield with skill any more.
Haker clutched at his chest in mock pain.
Oh, an arrow to my heart from my own captain. Such tragedy.
Garrow maintained an even smile, But in truth he could detect the weariness, the pain in his old friend's forced jocularity. Haker had lost men from his squad on the world ship, and the pain of it was just below the surface.
"We all fought well this day," said the captain,
the words coming of their own accord.
"Once more the Death Guard have been the tools that carve the Emperor's will into the galaxy."
None of the other Astartes spoke. Each of them had fallen silent, faces turned over Garrow's shoulder. As he cast around to learn why, as one, the men of the 7th Company came to their knees.
"My battle captain."
It perturbed Garrow to realize that he had not even heard the approach of his Primarch. As in the assembly hall before the assault, Mortarion made issue of his presence only when it suited him to do so. Garrow bowed low to the master of the Death Guard, dimly aware of Typhon at his lord's side, and a servitor lurking behind the first captain's cloak.
"My lord," he replied.
Mortarion's face shifted in a cool smile, visible even behind the breath collar around his throat and lips.
"The Sisterhood has taken leave of us. They spoke highly of the 7th.
Garrow dared to raise his gaze a little. Like him, the Primarch was no longer clad in his brass and steel power armour, but instead in common duty robes over a set of more utilitarian gear. Still, even in such simple garb, there was no mistaking his presence. High and gaunt, a man spun from whipcord steel muscle, he was as tall in his deck boots as Typhon was in the First Company's Terminator armour. And, of course, there was the Man-Reaper. Sheathed across his back, the arc of the heavy black blade curved behind his head in a lightless sweep.
"Stand, Nathaniel, please. It becomes tiresome to look down upon my men."
Garrow drew himself up to his full height, looking into the Primarch's deep amber eyes and steeling himself not to draw back. In turn, Mortarion's gaze burned deep into him, and the captain felt as if his heart were held in the Primarch's long, slender fingers, being weighed and considered.
"You ought to watch your step, Typhon," said the Death Lord. "This one, he'll have your job one day."
Typhon, ever sullen, only grimaced. Before the first captain, the Primarch, and at the edges of his sight, the twin guards of the Death Shroud, Garrow felt as if he was at the bottom of a well. The nerve of a common man would probably have broken beneath such scrutiny.
"Lord," he asked, "what service may the 7th Company do for you?"
Mortarion beckoned him.
"Their captain may step forward, Garrow. He has earned a reward."
Nathaniel did as he was told, darting a quick look towards Haker. His words at the lakeside echoed in his mind. "We don't seek accolades and honours." Garrow had no doubt that the veteran was keenly amused by this turn of events.
"Sir," he began, "I deserve no special..." "That is not a refusal forming upon your lips, is it, Captain?"
warned Typhon.
"Such false modesty is unwelcome." "I am merely a servant of the Emperor," Garrow managed. "That is honour enough."
Mortarion gestured the servitor forward, and the captain saw that it carried a tray of goblets and bowls.
"Then instead, Nathaniel, might you honour me by sharing my drink?"
He stiffened, recognising the ornate cups and the liquid in them.
Of course, Lord.
It was said that there was no toxin too strong, no poison so powerful, and no contagion of such lethality that a Death Guard could not resist it. From their inception, the 14th Legion had always been the Emperor's warriors in the most hostile of environments, fighting through chem clouds or acidic atmospheres that no normal human could survive in. Barbarous, the Legion's base, the adoptive home planet of Mortarion himself, moulded this characteristic. As with their Primarch, so with his Astartes. The Death Guard were a resilient, invincible breed. They harden themselves through stringent training regimens as neophyte Astartes, willingly exposing themselves to chemical agents, contaminants, mortal viral strains, and venoms of 1,000 different shades. They could resist them all. It was how they had found victory amid the blight fungus of Ursa, how they had weathered the hornet swarms on Ogre IV, the reason why they had been sent to fight the chlorine-breathing Yorgle. The servitor deftly mixed and poured dark liquids into the cups, and Garrow's nostrils sensed the odour of chemicals, a distillate of the agent's magenta nerve bane, some variety of sword beetle venom, and other less identifiable compounds. No Astartes in Mortarian service would ever have dared to call this practice a ritual. The word conjured up thoughts of primitive idolatry, anathema to the clean, impious logic of imperial truth. This was simply their way, a Death Guard tradition that survived, despite the intentions of men like Ignatius Grulgor. The cups were Mortarians, and in each battle where the Death Lord took the field in person, he would select a warrior in the aftermath and share with that man a draught of poison. They would drink, and they would live, cementing the unbreakable strength of the legion they embodied. The servitor presented the tray to the Primarch, and he took a cup for himself, then handed one to Garrow and a third to Typhon. Mortarian raised his goblet in salute.
Against death.
With a smooth tip of his wrist, the Primarch drained the cup to its dregs. Typhon showed a feral half-smile and did the same, completing the toast and drinking deep. Garrow saw a flush of crimson on the first captain's face, but Typhon gave no other outward sign of distress. He sniffed at the liquid before him, and his senses resisted. His implanted neuroglottis and preomnor organs rebelling at the mere smell of the poisonous brew. But to refuse the cup would be seen as weakness, and Nathaniel Garrow would never allow himself to be accused of such a thing.
"Against death," he said.
With a steady motion, the captain drank it all and placed the upturned goblet back on the tray. A ripple of approval drifted through the men of the Seventh Company, but Garrow barely heard it. His blood was rumbling in his ears as punishing heat seared his throat and gullet, the powerful engines of his Astartes physiology racing to fight down the toxins he had ingested. Decius was watching him in awe, without doubt dreaming of a day when it might be his hand, not Garrow's, holding the goblet. Mortarian's chill smile grew wider.
A rare and fine vintage, would you not agree?
His chest on fire, Garrow couldn't speak, so he nodded. The Primarch laughed in a low chug of amusement. Mortarian's cup could have contained water for all the apparent effect it had upon him. He placed his hand on the battle captain's back.
Come, Nathaniel. Let's walk it off.
As they came to the ramp that led to the balcony above the Grand Armory chamber, Typhon bowed to his liege lord and made his excuses, walking away towards the alcoves where Commander Grulgor and the Second Company made their station. Garrow cast back to see the Death Shroud following them in lockstep, moving with such flawless precision that they appeared to be automata and not actually men.
"Don't worry, Nathaniel," said Mortarian. "I have no plans to replace my guardians just yet. I am not about to recruit you into the secret dead."
"As you wish, Lord,"
Garrow replied, getting the use of his throat back.
"I know you frown on such things as the cups, but you must understand that honours and citations are sometimes necessary."
He nodded to himself.
"Warriors must know that they are valued. Praise from one's peers must be given when the moment is right. Without it, even the most steadfast man will eventually feel unvalued."
There was an edge of melancholy that flickered through the Primarch's voice, so quickly that Garrow decided he had imagined it. Mortarion brought them to the edge of the balcony, and they looked down at the large assemblage of men. Although Endurance was not large enough to hold the entire legion, many of the Death Guard's 7 companies were represented below, in whole or in part. Garrow caught sight of Ulis Temeter, and his comrade threw him a salute. Garrow nodded back.
"You are a respected man, Nathaniel," said the Primarch. "There's not a captain in the whole of the Legion who would not acknowledge your combat prowess."
He smiled slightly again.
"Even Commander Grulgor, although he may hate to admit it." "Thank you, Lord. And the men? The men trust you. They look to you for strength of character, for leadership. And you give it." "I do only what the Emperor commands of me, sir."
Garrow shifted uncomfortably. As honoured as he was to have a private moment with his master, it troubled him in equal measure. This was not the direct, clear arena of warfare, where Garrow understood what was expected of him. He was in rarefied air here, loitering with a son of the Emperor himself. If Mortarion sensed this, he gave no sign.
"It is important to me to have unity of purpose within my legion, just as it is important for my brother Horus to have unity across the entirety of the Astartes." "The War Master," breathed Garrow.
There had been rumours aboard the Endurance for some time that elements of the Death Guard's flotilla would be sent on a new task after the Yorgul interception. At the forefront of this talk was the possibility that they would join the 63rd Expeditionary Fleet of the Great Crusade, commanded by none other than the chosen son of the Emperor himself, Horus the War Master. It was clearly more than rumour, he now realised. Garrow had fought side by side with the warriors of Horus's 16th Legion in the past, and had only admiration for men like Malogurst, Garviel Loken, and Tarik Torgadon.
"I have served with the Lunar Wolves in the past, Lord."
"They are the sons of Horus now," Mortarion corrected gently.
"Just as the Death Guard were once the Dusk Raiders. My brother expects great things of our Legion, Captain. A battle is coming that will test all of us, from the War Master to your lowly housecarl."
"I will be ready."
The Primarch nodded.
"I have no doubt of that. But it is not enough to be ready, Nathaniel."
His fingers knitted together over the iron balustrade.
"The Death Guard must be of one mind. We must have singular purpose, or we will falter."
Garrow's discomfort deepened, and he wondered if the after-effects of the cup's contents were not still upon him.
I'm not sure I understand you, Lord. Our men find solace in the lines of command with their superiors and inferiors. But it is important that they also have a place in which the barriers created by rank can be ignored. They must have freedom to speak and think unfettered."
All at once, the insight Garrow had been lacking came to him in a cold rush.
"My lord refers to the lodges."
"I have been told that you have always eschewed membership."
"Why, Nathaniel?"
Garrow stared at the deck plates.
"Am I being ordered to join, Lord?"
"I can no more command the workings of the lodge than I can the motion of the stars," Mortarion said easily.
"No, Captain. I do not order you. I only ask why. Illuminate me."
It was a long moment before he spoke again.
"We are Astartes, sir, set on our path by the Master of Mankind, tasked to regather the lost fragments of humanity to the fold of the Imperium, to illuminate the lost, castigate the fallen and the invader. We can only do so if we have truth on our side. If we do it in the open, under the harsh light of the universe, then I have no doubt that we will eventually expunge the fallacies of gods and deities. But we cannot bring the secular truth to bear if any of it is hidden, even the smallest part. Only the Emperor can show the way forward.
He took a shuddering breath, intently aware of the Primarch's unblinking stare upon him.
These lodges, though they have their worth, are predicated on the act of concealment, and I will have no part of that.
Mortarion accepted this with a careful nod.
What of your battle brothers who feel differently? Well, that is their choice, Thode. I have no right to make it for them.
The Primarch drew himself up once more.
Thank you for your candor, Battle Captain. I expected nothing less.
He paused.
I have one more request of you, Nathaniel. And this, I'm afraid, is indeed an order. Sir.
Garrow felt an odd flutter in his chest.
Once we are done here, this fleet will make space for the Istvan system to rendezvous with the War Master's command ship, the Vengeful Spirit. Horus will be holding a war council with representatives of the World Eaters and the Emperor's Children, and I will have need of an equerry to join me there. First Captain Typhon will be engaged in other duties, so I have chosen you to accompany my party.
Garrow was speechless. To extend such a privilege to a battle captain was unprecedented, and the thought of it made his chest tighten. To stand in Mortarion's presence was heady enough, but to be close at hand before an assembly of the Emperor's sons, led by the War Master, it would be glorious.